Hello and welcome to Pods Like Us. I'm Martin Grubel, known to my friends as Marv, and this time, while I try and remember where the camera is, this time I am joined by JR Sparrow from WV Uncommonplace. Hey JR, hope you're okay. Thanks for speaking to me.
Thank you so much, Marv, for having me on, and you have an amazing audience, and I'm glad to finally get on the air with you. This has been a tried and true punch and pull type deal.
Yes, we've been speaking about this it feels like over a year that we've been trying to find.
And I want to say it actually has been a whole year.
Yeah. Yeah, it has. But yes. Like we were saying before we started, podcasters are so busy that you get that little moment and then something will pop up, or occasionally podcasters will double book, and that happens a lot as well. So being able to fit a time in, and when you're in different countries to each other, is not an easy thing to do.
Oh, yeah. And like what I have developed for my UK audience, whenever I bring them on the show, I always like to catch them on Saturdays at 8 a.m.
Yep.
Because I know like that's the middle of your day, correct?
Yeah. So you're in, so you're West Virginia, which you're 6 hours behind. So that would be 8 a.m. to you would be 2 o'clock in the afternoon to us.
Yeah. So usually on Saturdays, unless it's something going on sports wise, I'm pretty much free on Saturday. So anytime I do something in the UK for my show, I usually get them scheduled on Saturday, because I'm like, hey, if you're doing something at 2 o'clock on Saturday, at least eat your lunch, put a microphone up to your face, and we can talk.
There you go. So long as there's no FA Cup final or World Cup, or something to do with soccer, then yes, you should be okay.
Right.
You'll still get me even if you've got soccer. So what is your history with podcasts then? I mean, are you like me where I started listening to podcasts really earlier on, when around 2008, I think I started. What about yourself?
With me, actually, yeah, I want to say I started about 2008. I started listening to podcasts. And initially what happened was I was in college, I was in my senior year of college. And the college radio station where I was at Appalachian State University closed.
Right.
So that was the first time that I'd actually seen podcasting done with all the major equipment. Because, you know, back then you had to have certain equipment. Yep. And these guys were just running this, like, I call it a pirate network. And next thing you know, they turned it into the Appalachian State Mountaineer podcast.
Yep.
And it was running in its infancy. And back then, that one didn't even have an RSS feed. It was actually just distributed across the campus.
Wow.
So that's where I got my early listening. And then I moved on to other shows in between then. And then I actually started podcasting in 2017.
Yep.
And from that point on, like, because, you know, a lot of people are pandemic podcasters.
Yes.
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
So I didn't deal with that no how. So I actually did my first show, which was West Virginia Uncommon, with a lady named Tuesday, and she bought me out of that show and took that show and rebranded it and took it to NPR, which is crazy.
Wow.
But that was my first major dealing in podcasting. And then I actually pod faded until 2019. And then I came back with the show, and the show, I didn't have enough traction with it. And I was doing things the backwards way. And when I say backwards way, was I didn't invest in my show. I had very cheap mics. I paid like $10 US for microphones. And I just hooked it into my MacBook and said, here, I'm going to go. And you know what type of sound comes with that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And so I laid low a little bit. And then I had a few little things happen, had a little tragedy happen. So I stopped podcasting again. And then I came back harder in 2020 because I was part of that pandemic rush. And a guy in the UK, actually in Scotland, named Pat, he was called Podcastagram. He took a liking to an episode I did with a lady named Lark Galley, and that's what got my stardom. And that's when people started really picking me up in Europe and across the world. It wasn't actually anything I ever did. It was just this one guy taking a liking to that episode and promoting it for free. And next thing you know, I am where I am today.
Wow. Pat is a great guy. He's been on my show before. Yeah. I've done a show with him. So you've basically gone into podcast history and show history there. So what was the original plan for the show and how has it developed over the years since then?
All right. So originally this was supposed to just be a pilot into a company that I have called Sometimes Cinema. Because we were dealing with the projectors that I always talk about beforehand in small capacities doing small events. And I wanted to branch off into that. And the next thing you know, someone was like, you need to shelve that idea for right now. And you need to become like Tavis Smiley. He's a famous reporter in America. They said, you need to do interviews with people, get people intertwined in what happens in West Virginia. Because West Virginia is almost like its own country. If you come to the U.S., people tell you West Virginia is really not a part of the United States. It's a whole different ballgame there, which it's the same place, but our high elevation makes us different. That's all. So I started digging into local talent and stuff like that. And because of errors and stuff that I made, I learned that I wasn't going to be an authority in everything. And then once I learned that, I learned one thing that I'll never be an authority on is music. Okay. Music is something I am one person you can never talk to about it. I love music. You can talk, you know, I can go from Steely Dan to Tupac or from Tupac all the way to David Bowie and talking, but I didn't start off early in that area. So people, when they hear me talk about music, they just laugh. So that was one thing. I can't have musical guests on my show either because it makes no sense for what I do, even though I do society culture.
So, yeah, I mean, I find it fascinating what you said there, because looking as an outsider from the UK to the US, it always seems to me like all these different areas of America are like their own place, essentially, their own different culture in all of these different states, have their own separate cultures to each other. And it's interesting to see to have a show like yours that looks into West Virginia specifically. And I like the idea of that, almost like a little, these shows like yours that are like a little micro introduction to the actual, how that state is and what that place is like.
Yes, sir. And like, I have a few conceptual episodes that haven't even come out. Like, a lot of people don't know what gigging means, like gigging for frogs, like with a three prong.
Okay.
A lot of people don't know about that. And we do it here. And when I was wrestling at a younger age, I was over in Munich, Germany, and they gig for eels. So, you know, that type of different stuff that we do here. So I try to incorporate in the early part of the show. I used to do way more stuff with West Virginia, but where I travel more of the U.S. now. I've covered more things, but I still quarterly make sure you get a good feel of what's in West Virginia. Like, I did an episode about a goat that knocked at my door. Yeah, it was kind of crazy on New Year's. And, you know, little fun things like that. I try to incorporate that because, like I tell people, when you come to America, I don't care where you come from, you either go East or West Coast, you go New York City, you go Washington, D.C. You might go to the Midwest, but most people go East or West Coast when they're – when they're coming, you know, so I try to make sure that we, you know, incorporate a little bit. So you, like you said, like, you know, what West Virginia is like, and if you want to come or if you don't want to come, because we have movies like Wrong Turn and all these other things that depict West Virginia as a place where there's vile, mutated, inbred humans. And that's not the case, except in the asylum.
Yeah. Some really good cinematography in that, or sort of like in Wrong Turn specifically, because we've seen that film, and I didn't know it was actually filmed in West Virginia. And now it makes sense because it has that look that's different to other films.
Yes, pretty good movie. And then it's another one, October Sky, that has Jake Gyllenhaal in it.
Yep.
People do a lot with that one. And then what was the other one? Coal Miner's Daughter wasn't filmed in West Virginia. That was filmed in Kentucky, but people correlate that. And then the old famous Country Road song that everyone knows.
Yes.
Those are the pop culture references.
Yeah. I've covered that in gigs before now, what we call gigs, which are like, you know, playing in a pub or public house or club. So how do you choose the topics that you discuss, and what sort of research do you do for them?
All right, so we'll go back to the beginning, how I did it in the middle, and how I do it now. Okay. In the very beginning, I had no idea what I was doing. I would literally search a topic, look for the 5 or 10 experts in that area, and I would pick the 8th or 9th person in that field. I never wanted the top people in something, because normally, is at the top of the field, those people have gotten to that position because either they worked their way to the top or they had some type of management that got them there. So someone that's 8th or 9th has experience and is still on their way to the top. So I found that you would get a better story out of somebody if it's something business related, even mental health wise. I would try to find somebody that was at the necessarily not the 2nd or 1st place loser, but the 3rd or 4th place loser in that category, and to bring them on the show. Towards the middle, when I started doing more curation, and I said curation because I know my accent sometimes, I would look at topics because I'd never cover anything that's current event. That's not my, I'm a nostalgia person.
Yeah.
So I would look and see who would relate to this or that, or who, like 4 guests that I could tie into 4 weeks that would make sense. Now, what I do now is the curation process is ridiculous because Saturdays, I leave open for the fun stuff that I like to do.
Yep.
And the stuff that's not sponsored, and the stuff that's sponsored, which I'm going to get into in just a second, the stuff that's sponsored, I make sure that you're going to get 4 weeks of something that's going to make sense. And just like we had with PodFest this week, I had so much content that, man, I think I dropped like 7 episodes, but yeah. I wanted to get that stuff out before we get into the perennial powerhouse month of February, because I cover a lot of Black history and different things in February, yep. Movies, pop culture, and stuff like that. So I try to align that month for what it's supposed to be. And now the way I do things is specific to the events that are going on that make sense to me. And I use an app called Verbal, and my audience communicates with me what they want to hear and what they don't want to hear.
Yep.
One thing that I used to do called Podcast Collides, I got rid of it 3 years ago because they love to hear from podcasters, but they don't want to hear from podcasters that don't align with what I was doing. And I used to just bring on people that had different complete genres, and those audiences at first would mix together, but I would always retain my audience, and only a few of them would go over to the other person. And I didn't think that was fair. So I leave, you know, people bringing on podcasters to their show to other people. And crazy thing now is that in another week, we're going to announce actually that Podcast Collide is coming back, but we're going to be more center based on like interview podcasts, like what you do with other podcasters.
Yep.
But I'm going to do it in a lighter manner than what I did before. So that's the whole process there.
Yeah.
Hello, Scoob Believers. This is DJ Scoob. From The Undiscovered Entrepreneur, a show that highlights brand new entrepreneurs that are just getting started in their entrepreneur adventure. And you're listening to Pods Like Us with my good friend Marv. Thank you.
Hey, this is Dave Jackson from The School of Podcasting, a show that helps podcasters plan, launch, and grow their podcast. And you're listening to Pods Like Us.
You know, you've caught me on a tangent now with that. Because I caught on to something there, and I'm thinking, so you've got Black History Month coming up, yeah,
yes.
And you're looking at that. So what would you say are 3 important films when it comes to Black history?
So with Black History Month, 3 important films that I say that everyone should see, and we're talking about cinematography, we're going to treat it like Criterion films.
Yeah.
I would go with The First Coming to America, because that represents comedy at its fullest.
Yep.
Another comedy, which is Harlem Nights, that has Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor. It has Red Fox. It has all of the comedians that made sense. No disrespect to Bill Cosby, but he was a television star. I never considered him a movie star.
Yep.
And then the last film, this is really, really crazy. There was a movie called What's Love Got to Do With It? It was a Tina Turner biopic.
Yeah.
I say those 3 films are the most important films to watch because that gives you a dynamic. Now, if we were going to go deeper and deeper into directors, you can watch anything by Spike Lee, and Spike Lee takes care of you. The Hughes brothers, I'm not a big fan of everything they do, but people say Boys in the Hood and stuff like that. You're not going to get that out of me because those films are great, but they're centralized to that time. The culture is not like that now. So those type of films are kind of like, but those three films I listed, especially Coming to America, if you watch that, that personifies comedy and everything that you, even though it's from the 80s, not the new one, God
knows. Yeah.
But that one personifies Black cinema to me, you know, or just African American cinema at best.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking at a film that talks about the history of Black people in America, I'd probably put Glory into there because of the importance of how important that was to the history of the United States, and that, you know, that troop of essentially Black soldiers that fought as a unit in the Civil War, and I think that is a really important film that I think is overlooked a lot by people, and a lot of people don't look at.
I can agree with you on that, Marv. And then, you know, even if you were, when you were going to say that, another one that I didn't think of, and this is wild that I'm going to say this, and I'll probably catch some flag for this, I'd actually say now Django.
Yep.
Because it depicts a part of history that a lot of people don't talk about. And the odd thing with that is I would love to get another movie about the Zulu Nation. If we could get something like that going. But I want the Zulu Nation from the point of the British and the Australians that came to get slaves. Okay. That's how I would want to know that part of that, their story too, because like, I don't even know if there's a good movie that even tells a story about Aborigines and how they got there. Yeah. That would be, you know, something good to, it's not American history, but it's African history at all. You know, that definitely would be something I would like to see, but you know, give or take, somebody will get to it at some point.
I always thought the Aborigines were the native Australians. I always thought. I didn't know, but I know the Jamaica and all the blacks in Jamaica, that they all came from Africa originally.
Yeah.
Because they were shipped over with the people who went there to go and start plantations in Jamaica, and they took basically the slaves with them, and then they've become the people that are the main, you know, basically the main native people in a sense. I don't know how to say it.
And I'll have to go back in history, because I swear, I know that the Aborigines were there before James Cook went, but yeah. I know that James Cook got some Africans and took them to Australia.
Yeah.
So I don't know necessarily, you know, obviously when Pangea and all that stuff was going on, people moved wherever they moved from. And at least in school for us, we were taught that Pangea, like Central Africa, was basically the capital of Pangea. So the spread, you know how history was taught. So I always assumed that all of us came from Africa at some point, and just when everything broke apart after Pangea, you know, things went whatever. What was that? Pangea. So that was the Mesozoic era. Is that correct?
Probably.
Something on that stretch. But I'm not a history buff anymore. But like I said, just in transporting of them, I know James Cook took some to Australia. Yeah. Now, the whole deal in New Zealand, that's a whole another story for another day.
Yes.
There's a lady that's in podcast, and I'm sorry, her name's leaving my mind, but she knows the New Zealand history for the Aborigines and all that, which I figure just if you're in Australia, which is a pretty big country, eventually you're going to migrate far enough east and end up over there and in Fiji Island. So, you know.
Maybe. And Samoa and all that. But, so that was fascinating. I loved going down that. So,
yeah.
How do you record and edit? Do you do it the way that we're doing now, where you'll use your phone and then I'm guessing that you use what we used to call, well, yeah, it's Spotify for podcasters now. Is it awesome? I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, so I'll tell you how I record. I have this device at home called an H6 Zoom recorder.
Yep.
I hook my XLR mics into that, which are Zoom ZDM1s, which I'm not promoting the product or anything. It's just something I use because I make a portable studio. Like if I lived over where you live, I would meet you at a public library in a closed area and we would do shows. Yeah. At these podcasts and events, I set up so people could do their show because I believe in having the equipment that's portable, and I don't like my equipment hooked to a computer because the translation that I get, and you can probably understand this, it doesn't matter if I have XLR mics or USB, it still has to connect through a USB mic. So, you know, your sound quality may sound better in these mics, but the actual transmission is the same thing with the USB mic, which I used to use Yetis, to the XLRs I use now. So we do the XLR setup. Then the second setup I do is an iPad with lavalier mics.
Yep.
And then the third setup is the iPhone, which I used to use an Android, but I would get the dongle for it and hook the Yeti mic into that and go through the phone because, you know, most phones have 4K cameras, or at least we're shooting at 4K and 60 frames on my phone, and you're shooting at your respective resolution at least 60 frames. So to buy a really expensive mirrorless camera, I never went down that road. So that's how I record. And I edit now in this software that's from Australia called Podcastle.
Yep.
Podcastle is an AI-generated service. I only use it to auto level. I do not distraction edit because I like the show to be natural.
Yep.
And if you say 50 times in the show, that's your issue, you know.
Yep.
I try to, you know, we coach ourselves not to go um. So even if a guest comes on, I want it to be as authentic as them sitting on my couch or us sitting in, at the hotel lobby talking about podcasting or whatever. So that's my editing process.
Yeah, because that's where I see the difference in some ways between, I mean, other than corporately made podcast, the indie podcasting, which is what we do, it has that almost natural feel of just people talking as they would if you met somebody down in a club or something, you were just chatting away there.
Right.
Whereas those other shows that are more corporate, like radio shows, there's a certain way that they have to present their shows, and they have to have that level of sheen, in essence, yep, that sort of production sort of sound. But that's how I see the difference, is that if you're listening to a podcast like ours, like this, you're listening for just two people in a normal conversation as you would yourself, as opposed to if you're in a normal conversation, you wouldn't be talking with somebody the way that you do in a professional radio show.
Correct. Yes. And I feel that same way. And in the marketing of shows like you and I's and what we do, it's that authentic, it's the intimacy that comes from this conversation. Because me and you have talked for a long time, but this is our first time actually. We did a little tiny pre-call and then we started.
Yep.
And, you know, we've already gone through the rigmaroles of how it's supposed to flow and how our conversation is supposed to go. And we don't run on each other or run off because we're both podcasters. So I know when to shut off and you know when to shut off. So it's almost like we've been friends and we're just sitting at a pub at the greatest football club in Chelsea and we're talking. And I did say Chelsea, everybody.
There you go. Chelsea. I think he means Chelsea in the UK as well, maybe.
Yes, that's what I mean. Yeah, Chelsea in the UK. I'm not a Manchester United fan or City, so I don't want to go down that road.
So when you do have guests, how do you choose the guests that you have, and what do you do on the lead up to talking with those guests in your show?
Okay, so first off, I use a service now called Podmatch. I used to go out and hunt for guests when I first started, but I'll be honest with you, I've become lazy. And when I'm on Podmatch, I will look if I want to talk to people in film or if I want to talk to someone, life coaches or different things like that. I will look specifically under that. I will read someone's bio, and then I'm going to tell you about this is the good podcasting hack that I put in here. I will take their bio, put it in ChatGPT, and I'll ask ChatGPT, what's exciting about this person? What do you find comfortable about this person? Because I want the audience to be comfortable with whoever they're going to listen to, because
yep,
most of the time when you do a show with someone like that that's not a podcaster, they take the show away from you in essence. Even if you ask so many questions, they're just them pouring their hearts out. So I try to find a guest that's gonna, and then I go listen to a podcast that they've previously been on. I don't like to put new people on the show because when you put someone that's fairly new, they're going to talk the whole time.
Yep.
And it needs to be a genuine back and forth, which they can get it more out, but I've had shows where you hear nothing but the guests and you hear me ask 12 questions and you hear them talk for 20 minutes. People listen to that, they go flat after 20 minutes of listening and they don't finish it. So I select them from off of Podmatch or even podcastguest.com. They send me a spreadsheet,
yep,
of everybody.
Yep.
You know, and they put all their information in there, which they're really nice. And thank you to Jessica, Michelle, and them over there doing that. And I just basically go from there.
And then you've got the music and the logo. That gets me every time because you've got the... Is that an AI voice that you've got doing the introduction?
Yeah. So I was talking to Pat and I was talking to someone else and they said, put confusion in your ship. Okay. So I don't actually have music. It's music playing behind the person. But I took an AI British accent. Okay. And I have her announcing the show. And I never change the intro because it puts confusion. And sometimes I know it does deter some people from listening, but a lot of people find it fantastic. They're like, this is really uncommon. And ties into the show.
Yeah.
So it's a quick way to pull them in because most people have either they're the host and they're announcing it or they have some kind of crazy jingle. But mine, you just hear that British person at the beginning and at the end and they're gone. You know, like, you're stumped. You're like, why is this doing this to me? What is this sensation? And that's called a call to action.
Wow. Wow. There you go. There's something for listeners there to take away.
Hey, this is Jeff Cummings from the Best Song Podcast, the show that is telling the stories of every song nominated for the Academy Award. You're listening to Pods Like Us.
Hey, this is Danny from 1 Minute Podcast Tips, the show that helps you be a better podcaster in just a minute a week. And you're listening to Pods Like Us.
And then you've got the logo as well.
Yeah, it's our third generation logo. The very first one, let me tell you about the first one. The very first logo I made in Microsoft Paint.
Yep.
I was just like, I'm not going to do anything trivial. Then another podcaster made my second logo. He said, your logo is so generic, blah, 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 blah. And I said, okay. And he made that one. And then the next one, my semi-co-host on this show, which she is the host of Spares Under Review, Stacy said, just throw something up there. She said not to put our images on it, but I still put our image on there. I threw up a projector, some different things to get people to kind of see what the show's about. Because we're doing a show that's not niche down and it has a bunch of series, I have to be very creative in letting people know that it's an around the world thing. It's not just set in a linear expression. And that's one thing I will tell any podcaster. If you don't niche down, it's harder to do business.
Yeah.
It's harder to do things, which in my case, it's not because I let the audience know clearly through, like, because we have a paid portion that the paid people, I send them emails and different things like that. They get more streamlined than the normal audience. The normal non-paying audience, they still know what's going on because if you follow me on any of the Instagram or, well, not even Instagram anymore, TikTok, wherever I'm at, Tumblr, wherever, I put up enough notice that you know if it's a show to tune into or if it's one of those things where you're just like, JR, I got a pass on this, which I'm accepting of that because not all my material is going to fit every person in the audience.
Yeah, but one interesting thing about your logo is that we have a similarity there where you've made it so that you've got the information there in the logo that's needed to give people an idea what it is.
But, yes.
Which I have, in essence, you can see in mine, you can see it's like people with headphones on and it's peas with the, they're in a pod.
Yeah.
But you've done the same with me in a sense where you've got that bit of space all around so that then you superimpose your guest. Sometimes when you've got a guest, you'll superimpose them into there like I do little squares sometimes of my logo with their logo in the corner there. So you do the same in essence. We've got similar sort of thing there as well.
Yes, sir. And I do that because I like my audience to see who they're going to be listening to. Because sometimes I had a guest on that is anonymous and nobody knows what she looks like. And I put up an image of someone that it wasn't. And I got a lot of flack for that show. And I ended up pulling that show, which is, I've only pulled up 2 shows in my whole career.
Yep.
I ended up having to pull that show. And one of my audience people got back to me and they said, hey, we need to see who's going to be on the show.
Right.
I've always stuck with that since then.
I should do that more often myself. So here we go for number 9 on the list of bullet points. Just in case, I didn't know whether you realised what I meant by this. So where to go? This is my idea of if people were coming to West Virginia,
yes.
What would you say are 3 things that are an absolute necessity when people come to visit West Virginia?
Okay, so number one, you have to go to Hillbilly Hot Dog, which is a challenge that you that everyone knows about when you search for West Virginia. Yep. It's a giant hot dog, probably like this, that wide.
Wow.
And it's, I forgot the name of the hot dog, but it's at Hillbilly Hot Dog in LeSage, West Virginia, which is near the University of Marshall. We are Marshall movie. Yep. And people come there to eat this hot dog. It's called the Home Wrecker. That's what it's called. Yep. And you get a t-shirt if you finish it. Quite a few people have done it. Some people end up on the end of things where they just got to sit down and you can eat it in an abandoned school bus because they have, that's where the, you can eat inside of it. So it gives you a real hillbilliest style of what life would have been like 200 years ago in West Virginia. Next thing is people come for Bridge Day across the United States and across the world. You jump off of, we have one of the largest bridges in the world. Yeah. Which is the across the in Fayette County, and you know the bridge because it's on the quarter, and people talk about it all the time. But Bridge Day, I mean, they had a guy in a wheelchair jump off, and you're landing in some really thin water. And when I say thin water, I'm not talking about shallowness, but everybody knows that when you jump into water, if you've never jumped into it, water has a thickness to it, and if it has a thickness to it, then you fall in feet first and you're fine. But if the water is kind of thin, not being shallow, but the water doesn't have enough density to it, you hit that, you're going to go straight to the bottom fast. And that water is thin. And people, there's boats down there to rescue people, but I always wondered about the guy in the wheelchair. Like, he has a parachute and stuff. Like, how did he get saved? Like, did his legs go limp? You know? But I'll leave that for another day or for someone to search on YouTube. But, so that's one, two, that's two things, right?
Yep, it is.
Then the third thing is people come here for the Translunatic asylum. Okay. It is one of the biggest asylums in the world, and it was a place where they held people that had intellectual disabilities because at that time they weren't treating them. And that's where you get a lot of this wrong turn. You get interpretations of it that ended up in movies like The Goonies.
Yep.
For the character from The Goonies, he was referenced to someone. And then a lot of the inbreeding that went on was because there's this thing in West Virginia called a holler. It's a one-way road in and out that people lived in. And sometimes family members never left their holler. So you can insinuate whatever you want about that, but we can say that there was romance in those hills. And that's where these super incredibly giant and mutated people came from. And they would just slam them in asylums if they got out of control. That's where all this incest and all this other stuff comes along from West Virginia, because at times people never left their hollers in certain areas in West Virginia that were not localized or didn't have a railroad or something coming through it. They were just wooded areas. I mean, we have areas out here, like I know some places in the world don't have cell phone service, but it's kind of crazy in the United States. We have a good deal of area that doesn't, like where I live, there's no cell phone service. You either catch me on Wi-Fi, but you got a 5-minute window where I have no service until I get home.
Wow. I don't know where to go from there, because so that people, you know, to give something away here, we've already discussed, and me and JR are going to return a couple of times and discuss other shows that he does. And what are those shows, JR?
They are Sparrows in the Review, and then the other one is West Virginia and Commonplace Presents the Collection. That is an archival show where I take our most downloaded or our most heavily touted episodes, and I present them out to people so they don't have to go through all 400-plus episodes to find the ones that they are going to like. And hopefully the ones that I pick are the ones they do like. And that is released every Monday. Spare is under review right now by critics alone is the best show out of the whole bunch. Everybody loves Stacey. So that show, that movie review and book review and whatever review we do on that one, that is the highlight right now. So on Tuesday, I tell everybody tune into that one because that's Stacey's bread and butter, and that's the most polished thing that we got going, because the sad thing about West Virginia and Commonplace, it's actually been recorded all the way until, last I checked, October 2024.
Right. Wow.
So the material that's released, I have time to go through and do the social media work. That's why I'm always over all that stuff. But I've recorded that show so much that when you see me drop a bunch of new stuff, it's because it's something that's fresh and it's not following the same ideas of the other things that I do on Saturday and the guests that I've, you know, pretty much lined up.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you're much further ahead than I am, but then I think that I'm quite far ahead, because this, we're recording now on the last day of January of 2024. And this will probably be coming out, I think, middle of March.
Okay.
Okay. Because I'm six or seven episodes ahead.
And I like that.
Yeah.
That's one thing that I tell everybody. If you can batch record, it makes it so much easier, because with the marketing and advertising, if you do those things, even if you don't, it gives you a way to curate things, and curating things goes a whole lot better than just throwing random stuff out.
Yeah. Yeah. And it stops you from being worried as well, especially with a show where you basically are talking to somebody else. You've got that fallback then that if somebody drops out 1 week and you haven't got anything to record, you've still got that where you don't need to be too worried, because you're that ahead that you can catch up easily in that much time.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And that's the best advice I'd give any podcaster. Batch record if you can. And if you can't, make an extra series where you can just do an episode solo and get it out the way.
What other advice would you give to people?
All right. The major advice that I would give to any podcaster, and this is hobbyist or someone that's using a platform to monetize, is invest in your podcast after 20 episodes. Get 20 episodes under your belt. And this is something I said today on Instagram, I don't care about how many downloads you got, because in the real sway of things, which I talk monetization across the board, if people ask about it, if you have at least 25 listeners, you can say that you have a base that out of those 25 listeners, at least 15 of them are diehard listeners that go beyond the podcast, go into the show notes. If you put links in to the guests and stuff, they go beyond your podcast to do something with you. When someone shows me that they have 5 to 10 listeners, I'm like, that's very good. And I don't discourage anybody, but I say at 5 or 10 listeners, that could be family. Because I had family that were listening, it was 10. When I got to 25 and whatever number I'm at now, it was because I built a community. And invest in your show in certain areas. And when I say that, I'm going to break it down real fast and I won't be too long. When I'm saying invest in, I'm talking about money to a degree, but here are the things that matter. I don't care if you record on a phone with lavalier mics. I don't care what microphones you use. Those episodes need to go into a DAW or digital area audio workstation. I don't care if you use Podcastle. I don't care if you use what's native in your apps. If you to do things with, because we test our episodes. We play them in a car, shower speaker, regular Bluetooth speaker, wired here headphones, Bluetooth headphones and headsets,
yep,
to hear how low our shows go. And if people would just auto-level half the stuff that they make, or just fix the leveling in them to make them just a little bit louder, they would sound better.
Yep.
You and I both know we got to turn the volume up on a lot of stuff. So investing in your audio quality is one thing that I tell everybody. I don't care what you're doing, where you are, if you're just a hobbyist, make sure that audio, because I had episodes that were trash, excuse my language, they were trash ass or dumpster juice. And I ended up having to throw them away because people were like, man, I can't even listen to this. It's derogatory to my ears. Turn it off.
Right.
So that's just one thing I say there. And then the next part of investing is invest in yourself. If you know that you're going to cover the Beatles, make sure you know that material. Don't go in there with this half-winded idea that you can get on Wikipedia 30 minutes before the show and become very well-versed in the Beatles and go on a show with someone and try to argue or engage in those type of conversations, because people make themselves look silly. And that's it.
Hey, this is Chris from Podtastic Audio, the show that I have created to help you create your amazing podcast. And you are listening to Pods Like Us.
This is Mac Jackson from the Forever Adventure Network, the home of the MacGyver podcast, the Never Gets Old podcast, and the MacGyver SG-1 audio series. And you're listening to Pods Like Us.
Yeah, I mean, the people I spoke with last night, picking up on a couple of those things, I don't know if you noticed, I interviewed people who have got a new show coming out. It's not out yet, and it's called Apples and Oranges. Okay. And so the Apples is based on the fact of Apple Music, Apple Records, which was the Beatles record company, and Oranges, because of the Beach Boys, California, Orange, and that. So essentially what they're doing is, and they're being really clever in this in some ways, they're doing a limited 35 episode and then it's done. And the idea is that they're going to go through the 1960s and compare what the Beach Boys were bringing out during that time and what the Beatles were coming out with, and then saying, well, this is what the Beach Boys did, this is what the Beatles did, and then they have an episode per episode on the Beach Boys album, then an episode on the contrasting Beatles one. But for the most part, it's about their opinions of what they think about it, which I think is a clever way to go in a sense, because that is about just basically two people like you would be in a pub or a bar somewhere, just talking with your friends about, oh, what did you think of this album? Oh, I thought this. And then you have this chat about that, and that's it done. But they've done what you said about the batch. They've already recorded 17, 18 episodes, and it's not out until next week.
Whoa. And see, I agree with that, because then it leaves time to do all this social media expression you need to do across, and then you can look back. And I tell people this about analytics. Analytics are what you make of them. Don't let any guru, don't let me, don't let you tell you what to do with your analytics. But if your analytics drive you in a certain area, like if you're a person that's demographic specific or a person that is, I say always look at how long someone listens to your show. That's one analytic I say look at. But, you know, they have enough time that they can look and see what's working and what didn't work. Maybe the Beach Boys catch on better, you know, than the Beatles. Or with that type of data, they can look and say, we released this episode on Tuesday. We decided to release the Beatles on Tuesday, the Beach Boys on Thursday, and it looks like it didn't work out. Let's switch the dates up.
Yep.
That type of stuff is the thing that when you batch record, you have time to look at. And like I said, don't worry about your downloads or anything like that, because that's neither here nor there. But being able to kind of see how the audience is gauged to your show, because originally I wanted to do my show on Wednesday, but I found Thursdays work out better because it gives them the weekend. And my show is a show that you can kind of listen to anytime. It's not something that's work-related or work-specific. So if you have 3 15-minute breaks in a day, you're going to listen to my show. At least the quick ones on Saturday, you can get that out the way quick while you're at work. Yep. No problem. Yep. The lengthier one, it may take a progression. It may be a stop and start. You move on to another podcast and come back. So that's why, like how they're curating that show, it gives them so much to look at and to see how it's gauged. Like I said, not from a marketing perspective or not from advertising, but just to see how it's going to work. If it doesn't work on these days, or even if the time frame that they let it out, because Marv, you wouldn't believe this, that the people that I deal with, like, give me analytics on when's the best time to post this and that. And my stuff, anybody that really pays attention to what I do, you'll see that you don't see me that often on Instagram. You see me all the time on TikTok, like I'm high on drugs and I just stay there.
Yep.
But I'm really not there because I record it on a Sunday and I just deliver it at different times. But batching gives you so much time to look at the whole bigger picture. When you don't batch, you're up against a giant like you and just a small giant like me. Because we have time to sit back and look from the clouds and be like, hey, this didn't work here. This guest was phenomenal here. This other guest promoted the other guest show, blah, blah, blah. So you can see all that kind of stuff. So I wholeheartedly agree with that, with them batching like that, because it gives you a round picture of what's to come.
Yeah. But they're also clever with it as well because of the subject that they've chosen.
Yes.
Because number one, I don't think it's any secret, really, that the Beatles are probably the artist that have the most podcasts about them that are niche specifically about them, as opposed to general music. If you're going into one specific niche subject for a show, it's the Beatles. There's so many of them, lots of them. So they've got that niche there where they can catch some of that audience that's after that Beatle knowledge, which, like we said, is really popular. But at the same time, then picking the Beach Boys as well as the ones to put them against is smart in a way as well, because they're not very, there's not much out there for them. There's only, I think, there's 2 or 3 shows about the Beach Boys, and that's it. So there, you've got a subject that's not covered that much, so you've got more potential there for getting audiences that aren't being catered for. So you're catering for those that have got that are into the Beatles and those that aren't being catered for as much, that's also a clever strategy.
Right. And then me and you both know this too. They're getting those baby boomers, which are still one of the biggest groups of people out there.
Yeah.
And baby boomers are some of my, actually they are at the very top of my listeners. So if I, you know, if I had came up with an idea, I wish I kind of did now, but like you said, they're getting baby boomers and the baby boomers seen both of them.
Yep.
No matter where you were in the world, the Beach Boys had a popularity that may not have been as big as the Beatles. Well, it was nowhere near the Beatles, but they're Americana. When you talk Americana, you talk Beach Boys. When you talk international success, you talk the Beatles, like you said. So that right there does it.
You know. Do you know that in 1966, the in a New Musical Express, which was a magazine or newspaper about music in the UK, in one of their polls, the Beach Boys actually came out first above the Beatles as the voted best band that year.
Whoa.
And that's something I found. That's something I found out last night. I didn't know that till last night when I spoke to those guys from Apples and Oranges.
That's crazy. Like,
yeah,
that's everybody must have been going surfing at the time.
That's true.
That's the only thing I can think of. People must have been spending a lot of time at the beach.
Absolutely. So, what podcast do you like to listen to yourself?
All right. I love everyone's podcast, even yours, Pods Like Us. But my crowning podcast is from this guy and gal, King and Queen Germ of Pod Saving My Marriage.
Yeah.
Their show used to be called Frocast, but the reason I like their show is because they do it for fun and they do their show in segments. Just like you cover focal points and all that, but their segments is so, like, the way with the sound and all the sound effects they do, because I don't do sound effects. The worst thing you're going to ever get is me hitting the microphone with my face. Yeah. Him and her have a show that's so choreographed. It's like a dance. So every Friday when it comes out, I don't listen to it till Monday, but I like to hear it. And then, I got to say, that's probably my favorite podcast. That's indie. Now, my favorite formal podcast is this group of guys at Buzzsprout called Buzzcast.
Yep.
I love Buzzcast because they give you a good look into, what's going on in the podcast industry and their take on it. And then everybody's favorite show, Pod News Daily.
Yep.
Pod News Daily, I love that show wholeheartedly. Like that one right there. When they do their one that they do, like the 45-minute hour one, I like that one too. But James Crislin and his partner, Sam Seffy, they are amazing. If I could be them for one day, I would love to be both of them.
Hello, everybody. This is Ryan.
This is Avery.
And we are from the Frame by Frame King Crimson podcast. And you are listening to Pods Like Us.
Hi, I'm Matthew Anderson, podcast host of the Lone Screenplay Nominee podcast, where we cover films that were solely nominated for an Oscar in the writing categories, and you're listening to Pods Like Us.
So what about you? What's your favorite podcast?
I listen to a lot of them. I've been listening to Sounds. I was going to say, when you mentioned James Cridlin there, he's someone where I would quite happily... I'm trying to arrange it now, actually. I'm going to arrange a group chat with James, and then I've got Ariel Nissenblatt.
Whoa!
Also, who's ready to do this chat group as well. And I'm trying to get hold of Tom Webster, because the whole idea there is, it'd be great just to have all these people that look at that side of it, at the pod news, what's going on in the podcasting world, and these people that have done these shows and have this history as well, And they, to me, they know what they're on about.
Okay, yeah, and I can go with that. Because Ariel, I follow her on Twitter, or X, whatever it's called.
Yep.
And she's very informative, and she listens to a lot.
She does, yes. She makes a lot.
Yeah, she's good on the critiques. And I know it sounds crazy, but I like to listen to those podcasts about podcasts. because or podcast industry, because sometimes it's little things that I find out, and in my little niche and stuff inside podcasting, where I do the whole listener migration thing, and I teach people unconventional ways to share shows, like with the whole Snapchat deal and using your Xbox to listen to shows and different things like that. My little consultant thing that I do, I don't charge anybody for it. I just help them find different ways to discover their show. I learned that I would be a good fit doing that in my ecosystem because of people like them, and that it would work out. And eventually it has turned into now on Fridays, I don't work on Fridays. And I'm in my time, like I do office hours now. I don't charge nothing crazy, like $5. We go in, audit your episode, and I show you the unconventional ways to move your show about. And I'm not doing that as a selling point on your show or anything like that, but you know, and even you could do some consultant like that, because you listen to enough podcasts, you know movements, directions, and you know how to tell somebody what's a good show and what's not a good show.
Yep.
And you have methods. So what I'm going to say, if you ever have free time in between the driving that you're doing at night, that's right, because you do drive at night, correct?
I do. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. That's when I do the listening.
Yeah. So sometime when you're not doing the listening, you can do the consulting and help out there that way. And that's one thing I like about the podcast community as a whole. Everybody's very supportive. Now, I will say this. I have had some feuds with some people, but that's just been because of communication issues. And I actually, my first feud was in the UK.
Okay.
Yeah, funny story there. It was a couple that came on my show in the embassy, and they decided that they wanted to do a podcast. And I'm the type of person back then, I would just give you advice even if you didn't ask me. And I didn't learn that that's actually a rude thing to do to people, because some people don't want your advice. Some people just want to fly by the night. And I didn't realize, and that's what happened with the stuff in America with the beast I've had here. It's always been that I went out to help somebody, and my intentions have always been good. But one thing that I didn't realize until my third year in podcasting, there is not a one-size-fits-all in podcasting.
Yeah.
That's why I hate when people charge money for certain things that you can Google and find yourself. Because that one-size-fits-all model that people do in their courses, it doesn't work for everybody. Not everybody has the motivation and fortitude to keep going in those marketing advertising. Some people just like to do a show and put it out there and have fun with it. And there's nothing wrong with that. And then you got these serious minded people like me that I want to push your show to the stratosphere, even if it's not mine. You know, I want your show to succeed. So every podcast that I listen to, and I tell every podcaster this, if I listen to your show, I share it all across the United States on a Snap Map. It stays there for 24 months, takes 24 hours for it to activate. But some people's shows end up in DC and different places, and they always wonder how they got these listeners. And I don't take credit for any of that. But I see it like this. Reciprocity comes back because you got amazing people like Marv that writes blogs that if you don't pay attention, you don't know about. And then you see the interaction on Twitter that you do. I'm giving you flowers here. Those simple interactions that you do have brought listeners to me.
Right.
Just as simple as you doing that, just whenever you listen to a show, or even if you don't listen and you just tag my little Twitter thing, people interact with it. And I know we got a lot of bad stuff on Twitter now, but, you know, if those little things aren't there, I want to tell you thank you. People don't understand that the silent support is better than the shout-out support. So, like, when I put people's shows on my Instagram story, I don't tag the podcaster because I don't want you to know that I'm doing it. I'm doing it just because I figure someone's doing the same for me and I don't need to know. We do it all in silence, and it all comes back, you know, tenfold or whatever.
Yeah, I've taken now to, I think you've noticed what I'm doing now, which is I will post up about my blog, Marv's Midlife Meanderings, if anybody's interested. And I post those up about it, but I leave it a while until I tag the people whose shows I speak about, because the idea is just to get people to go there blindly and look at that blog and check out those shows before I let those people behind the shows know that I've actually done that.
Yeah, and I like that idea because that helps for growth. Because, you know, like force feeding something by putting your tag on there. I know you work a busy schedule and we have 6 hours between us. The only time that ever makes sense for anybody in our time frame is 7 a.m. Eastern time. That's the only time in the world, and I will say this, that makes sense for anyone. I don't care where you are. You know, you're New York City, Thailand, wherever. 7 a.m. Eastern time starts the business world and social media for everybody. So like you said, I want to not invade your privacy or anything like that. I just want people to know, like, hey, Once in a Blue Moon. If you look at that West Virginia Commonplace story, no matter if it's 500 to 1,000 people that check it out every day, they're looking at your show, and they can click that Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Pandora, because those are the three ones that I push. Because no offense to Apple, I love them to death because most of my products are Apple, but they don't give you a sharing solution that works.
Yep.
So any of those that I can push, and even Fountain and the other podcast 2.0 stuff, I do push those out there. I promote your show heavily on Fountain FM because I want people to get involved with that. And I don't know if you claimed your show over there or not, so that you can get that cryptocurrency, because you can get stats over there. If you haven't done that, definitely do that. And that's one thing I want to throw out there for every podcaster. Podcasting 2.0, value for value. People get paid to listen to your shows. They get stats, and they can, and it's a minute amount of money, but it's making money on your show, because 92% of podcasters do not make money in podcast.
That's true. Yeah. So that's podcasting 2.0. And was the other one Fathom FM, you say?
Fountain, like the water.
Okay, Fountain, yeah, FM. Fountain
FM. And there's other ones. There's other value for value, but Fountain FM is the one that I found. I like their UI and everything and how it's set up, because you can make a playlist of the shows you want. So when your shows come out, they get into that queue. And if I'm on my phone, or I have a dock station that I keep my other phone on, I can start playing shows while I'm cleaning or doing something. And I'm still paying attention to the people, but I have them all in a queue. And even the ones that I hadn't listened to previously, if I get a new show, I'm able to just listen to them on that playlist without me having to make it. It just puts them automatically in the queue from whenever you release episodes. Mm-hmm. So it makes my life easier. It's easier than using Spotify, where I got to, you know, and I'm not going to say this in a rude way, but we have some podcasts that we don't want to listen to anymore. We still support them, and they're stuck there, and I got to listen to that one. Then I get to Mars, and then I get to another one I like, and then I get to three of them that have either pod faded and they're still on my list, and they sit there. But Fountain FM, if you claim your show over there, you can set it up to, and it's a cryptocurrency called stats that, like I said, if I listen to your show, it's an hour long, you might get 20 stats. I don't know exactly what that translates to, but you can cash it out at the end of the day.
That's brilliant. That's cool. Yeah, what you were saying about Spotify, I mean, I have to do Spotify occasionally, because you have some podcasts that only go out on Spotify, and then you get shows that only go out on Amazon or on these specific sites as well. But I do find their user interface for podcast very tricky to use, because you can't set like a playlist essentially for podcast like you can all these other services.
Right. So that's why I've moved over there. And then one announcement I will make on your show, because the show's coming out in March. After a lengthy legal battle that I've had with Spotify, my exclusivity of the actual show being hosted by them, I will be taking my show elsewhere in May.
Okay.
I haven't decided a home yet, but I will tell any podcaster that starts out in podcasting, I'm sorry I didn't put this in there, using a free service sounds good and fine and dandy, but when you do not read all of the paperwork, and if they take your show work, where I'm an ethnicity and I live in a rural area, they offer us, and this is something that I don't go into detail much, so you're getting an exclusive, Marv. If you're an ethnicity, or even if you're white, whatever, certain demographics that they look for, they will pick your show. And Spotify did this to me, and I'm allowed to say this now because everything's settled. They took my show and they boosted my numbers to take them to an advertiser to get more money for them.
Okay. Yeah.
So they elevated my numbers, made me think I was doing more than what I was doing, and made money off me. And when I found this out, I went and took legal action.
Yeah.
And I hate to put that on your show. You can edit that out if you have to, because I don't want Spotify to get you. But which they won't, but I just warn every podcaster that I've gone through some lengthy situations like this. Yep. So be careful when you go to a free service with your show, even if you're only paying $5 or $20 at Buzzsprout or any of these other places, Captivate, I don't care, Libsyn, whoever, Blueberry, find you a service that you actually got to pay for, because you know you're going to own your stuff at the end of the day, and there's going to be some legitimacy to it. Spotify for podcasters sounds like a good idea, and yeah, you make some money with them, but it's all about, at the end of the day, will Spotify the money that they can make off of you?
Yes. Yep. That's true.
And if your show has just a hint of brilliancy in it, they'll put that exclusive tag on it, or you'll a little extra change, make you think you're the next Joe Rogan, or not Joe Rogan, but it'll make you think that you're going to leave your normal job And then bam, you start seeing that red writing on the wall and you have to take care of your show. So that's why I will tell anybody, if you're listening to West Virginia Commonplace right now, I know someone said it seems like there's a lack of direction. The only reason is that I've got to finish out that deal.
Yep.
And then I'm off to whatever company I'm with going on that one. Now, I will say this. West Virginia Commonplace Presents a Collection is on Acast. Acast is a good place. Sperry's Under Review started out on Asha. Asha is a good place to go to because that French-based company has built up a bigger platform now. They've been buying this and that. But I ran into some issues with Asha with Stacey's show early on, and we couldn't get it on Apple. And in America, you got to be on Apple.
Yeah.
And we left them and went to Spotify for podcasters. And her show is free to go anywhere it wants to go. There's nothing holding it back. So when I move my show, I'm going to take her show with me.
Right. Anyway, where can people find you and get hold of you, JR?
You can find me on any podcatcher under WV Uncommonplace. Across the internet, WV Uncommonplace. If you look for me on Twitter, though, it's JR3650SP. Yep. Sperry's Under Review has one for Twitter. And our major platform right now is TikTok. We're doing 10-minute interviews over there, or 5-minute interviews to keep up with the long-form, short-form video craze. And that's about it.
That's cool. Right. Thank you for speaking with me today, JR.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much, Mark, for having me on.
Thank you very much. You can find Pods Like Us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Threads. And you can contact us through podslikeus@gmail.com. There's also a Patreon as well. If you just go patreon.com/podslikeus for £1 a month. Well, we call it £1 in England. So I think it's about $1.25 in America, or the equivalent to. You get extra bonus episodes and diary episodes. Anyway, thank you everyone for listening, and hope you're listening again to another episode of Pods Like Us. Thank you.